email sent in this.
The following interview was conducted with Sarah Johnson, the Director of the Dining Services, Purdue University Housing and Food Services for the Purdue University Oral History Program. It took place on Wednesday, November 19th at her office in Smalley Hall on campus. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about your parents and where you were born. And
well, I was actually born in Louisville, Kentucky, lived in southern Indiana at the time with my family. And my birth parents both passed away when I was quite young. So my sister and I, at the age of 9 and 13, she's younger, I'm older, came to West Lafayette to live with an aunt and uncle. And those are now our parents, Mary and Dick McDowell, both graduates of Purdue. My sister and I are both graduates of Purdue. I'm married to a Purdue grad. Purdue is in our family for many generations and many people.
Tell us about where you went to early school and where you went to high. Did you go to high school here?
I went to West Lafayette High School. Came here, I was in junior high when we came here, so I went to West Lafayette Junior High, High School, and then to Purdue.
Did you have any other options that you were going to go or
no? Nah, it was pretty much understood that I would go to Purdue, and I didn't really have any other aspirations at that time. You know, in those days, we pretty much stayed close to home. And
did you live on campus?
I did. I lived in the residence halls all 4 years that I was in school at Earhart at that time, which was had recently been named Earhart Hall. It was originally called H8 at first. And I think it was the first year that I was there as a freshman, they were naming things, and they named the club, the student club, the Itasca Club, after the last ship that had contact with Amelia Earhart. And so it was interesting
Let
to hear all that.
Let me ask you this, before that, they were not naming buildings? Was that for the research? They were just, what, H's or something like
correct,
that?
Correct, okay. Right. Yeah, for many years, they were named H, and then a number, H8 was Earhart, and then eventually became named. Now, Shreve Hall, I don't think it was ever really H9. I mean, it was numbered that way, but it was named fairly early on.
Sure.
Okay. But some of the others were later after they had opened. Okay. Yeah.
What student activities did you participate in, and what was your major? And
I majored in, at that time, it was School of Home Economics with a focus in foods and nutrition, and graduated in that area, then went to the University of Iowa for a dietetic internship to become a registered dietitian. And while I was there, I was actually there for 2 years to finish my master's. So I got my master's from the University of Iowa in nutrition. And I laugh and say I didn't ever intend to come back to Purdue. You know, this was home, and I wasn't going to come back here. I was going to go somewhere else
to
work.
Where do you think you might go? Or had you
I don't know.
How did
you
have to pick Iowa?
Well, we could apply for 2 dietetic internships, and
we had to do that after you got the program.
Right, in order to become a registered dietitian, you had to do an internship. And so, again, it wasn't too far from home. It was in the Midwest. I really wasn't very adventuresome, I guess, then. And so that was one of my choices, and I was accepted there, and it was a good experience.
Who was the dean of the school when you were here? That had been
Eve Goebel. Yes, Eve Goebel.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Was the dean at that time.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
And Stonehall, of course, was built, wasn't it?
Yes, it was here. It was actually called Home Economics Administration Building at that time. It was named Stonehall a little later.
Okay.
But it was called Home Ec Hadam. HADM was the was the acronym. And so I had some wonderful professors in that department in foods and nutrition.
Any of them still around?
No one around. But I
Do
let's
you
see.
In touch with any of them? Some of them retired and.
Well, Avanel Kirksey is one who is still around. I mean, she's not here physically. She's in Arkansas, but I see her occasionally. And
they have that lecture series.
Right. They have a lecture series in her name. Vianna Bramblett was one of them, and she's no longer living, but she was my teacher for meal management class. Meal management? Ooh, now I can't remember the name, but a class that was very hands-on, where you had to plan, prepare meals and things.
Did they have the home demonstration houses at that time?
Home management houses.
Did they?
They did have them. I did not have to take that class, but they still did. Yeah.
I've heard that name, and Mary Louise Foster. She was involved with that.
Right.
And, So I've learned a little bit about that.
Have you interviewed her?
Yes, I
was going to say she'd be an excellent person.
Yes, I have interviewed her. I see her from time to time.
Yeah.
Right. But they were still in operation when you were here as a student.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and I graduated in 69. I bachelor's in 69. Okay. So there were a lot of changes happening in that period of time.
What was the campus like at that time?
Well, it was, of course, a pretty conservative campus all along, but that was during the Vietnam era, or the beginning, I guess, of the Vietnam era. And so there were times when, you know, the sit-in at the Union and some demonstrations.
Unrest,
that's a good word. Actually, when I went to Iowa then, University of Iowa, which is sort of the liberal arts part, the IU, the Indiana University of Iowa, as compared to Iowa State, but went to the University of Iowa, they were pretty, quite a lot of unrest there. They were burning some buildings, and so that was a little bit of a culture shock for me to go to that kind of a campus.
That's right.
We didn't go that far here at Purdue.
Okay.
So anyway, I graduated and got my master's at the University of Iowa, and then Helen Townsend, who was the director in this current job that I have, was in this job, the director of dining services, contacted me, actually, to see if I'd be interested in coming back to Purdue and working in food service here. I had been a student employee when I was in school, and she had known my family because my folks worked at Carrie Quad with her, and so we had this
your
long...
Your mother did, right? Did she work on campus?
She and they met at Carrie Quad in the kitchen, in East Kitchen. And
was he working there?
And he was the head waiter, and she was the dietitian. And Helen Townsend was the manager, the director, food manager. And so...
No wonder she knew the family.
She knew the family quite well. And so she called me and asked if I'd be interested. And I said, well, I'll come back and talk to you about it. And I did. And 37 years later, here I am.
Right.
Getting ready to retire from the position that she had at that time.
How long had she been here for quite a while, though? She
retired in 76, and she came... I'm just working on a project about that. She came in 42, I think, and retired in 76. So
she was a good friend of Ann Kirker's.
Oh, is that right?
Who was the veterinary medical. And that's why I met her.
Oh, okay.
That's why I met her. So
all right. Yeah, and then she died in... 2006, so about 3 years ago.
Tell us then, what was your initial thing, and then go on from there. Where did you work when you first started?
Started here?
Yeah.
I was assigned to Harrison Hall. I was a food supervisor, and was in that role for 2 years, and then was promoted to food manager at the Windsor Halls, where I was for 13 years. And then at that time, Dorothy Wicker, who was the director of dining, followed Helen Townsend. She retired in 86, and so then I was selected to become the director of dining services in 1986.
Tell us a little bit about that and what the responsibility, the challenges, et cetera, on that.
Okay. Well, it was... the responsibilities were for the food service in the residence halls. The food operations, the cafeterias, the grills, what we call them grills then, the snack shops that were in several of the halls. So I was responsible for the staffing of those facilities, the professional staffing, coordinating policies, procedures, working with menus, special events, and just I like to tell people it was anything that had to do with food service could end up on my desk because the buck stopped here, and so I had a lot of responsibility there.
Who did you report to? Was that Ron Fruitt?
This position reports to the director of residence halls, and at that time it was John Sauter.
Okay.
Ron was the vice president at that time.
Okay.
For housing and food services, so. John Sauter was my boss when I came into this current role.
Okay. Did you interact with the students?
Yes, and
I'm
that's
sure you have the biggest. Does food service hire the largest contingent of student employees on campus normally?
I think that's probably true. Okay. We hire we like to have around 1,000 student employees on our payroll, and I think that for any one single area,
sure.
That's probably we rely heavily on students, and I've always enjoyed working with the students. I like to say that one of the best parts of working on a college campus is that the students never get any older.
Yeah.
They're always the same age. And so therefore, we don't get any older either. I'd like to think that. But, and I think one of the things I missed when I came into this current role as director is the interaction with students. Because when I was a food manager, when I was a food supervisor, I was working with them daily.
More on a one-on-one basis.
Right. And so throughout the years in this role, I have tried to incorporate students into projects and planning and input committees as well, and just keeping them involved and
sure.
keeping in touch with their thoughts.
What about programming? Do you plan on special programming and that the residence halls have as far as housing? I know, say, at Tarkington, they always have an awards thing at the end of the year.
Oh, okay, yeah. Most of that's done at the hall level, at the hall level. But if we do a system event, for example, tomorrow night, Thursday night, is the Thanksgiving dinner. And so that we would coordinate somewhat. Here again, a lot of it's done at the hall level, but we would coordinate that it all happens on the same date and what the menu is and so forth. But we over the years, have had a number of special events. I remember one that was called Vote, Voiced Opinions Toward Eating. And we did it during a presidential election year. And so while everybody in the world was voting for president, our students were voting for their favorite foods. And then it was fun. It was on, we did it on Election Day. Then on Inauguration Day, we served that meal. So they voted,
the one that won.
And I mean, it was things that we expected, like spaghetti and chicken strips and, you know, chocolate chip cookies. I don't remember for sure. But it was just a really neat way to get students involved and thinking about what they do.
Did you do some surveys with students too over time?
Oh, we do a lot of surveys. We're in process right now of a web-based survey, customer satisfaction survey, that we do every other year in alternate years through our professional organization, NACUFS, the National Association of College and University Food Services. And so that will give us a benchmark for how we're doing with customer satisfaction. We also have comment cards that students can fill out. If they drop them in campus mail, they come directly to me, and I always respond to a comment card. If a student signs their name and their email address, I will email them with a response, and I expect the managers to do the same, so that we let them know that we read those, we think about them. We can't always do what everybody wants, but we do consider that.
We do acknowledge that we've got it, and I think this is good, because today everything is so, you're pushing buttons and you don't get any reaction. And I get your newsletter that comes out, and I always read the questions, and it's really nice where they take time to send something in. I thank you very much for the service that was done and things of that sort.
Really,
the Q&A is really very nice.
Yeah.
What about the your big overhaul of the dining facilities, that master plan? Make a few comments.
Okay, for the last about 10 years, that's really occupied my time heavily, but it's been so exciting. It's been challenging.
How did it come about?
Well, it actually came about after we opened Hillenbrand.
That was
the last new residence hall, and opened in 1993, so 15 years ago now. And it had a dining service in it, as all of the halls did at that time. And the students just flocked there. I mean, we had lines out the doors and down the hall and out.
Could you eat at different halls at that time? Was the card acceptable at all cards or not?
At that time, we were just beginning the electronic card. Yeah,
okay.
And so when Hillenbrand opened, we piloted it in a couple of halls. So everybody wanted to come and eat at Hillenbrand because it was new. And so I thought to myself and talked, and I said, you know, we have to do something with the rest of these facilities to make them equally attractive, because Hillenbrand can't serve the whole campus. And so I began to think about that and work with a consulting firm that does master planning for dining services, and spent a couple of years really talking about what do we need to do to meet the needs in the future, to look down the road, and then to see what the students are going to want.
Right.
And so ultimately, with the help of the consultants and lots of discussion with, then Fred Ford, who was executive vice president and treasurer, with Ron, who was the vice president, and neither of whom were real sure they wanted to change. But John Sauter, who was my boss at the time, and I were feeling more and more strongly all the time that we had to move forward and be aggressive, a little bit aggressive, and make some changes so that we'd be ready for the future. And so we decided ultimately that we would consolidate from the 11 cafeterias that we had then, very traditional, straight line, stainless steel college cafeterias, that we would consolidate from 11 to 5, and that we could then put our resources into really great state-of-the-art facilities with lots of variety, lots of menu choices that students would like, and really meet the needs of the students, and at the same time be more be efficient with our resources. That we couldn't afford to remodel and renovate 11 facilities, but we could do 5 and
it
make it really
mentioned,
great.
Though, that this is self-supporting, so you don't get any university funds.
That's correct. We are, and I tell students that a lot when they ask, well, why can't we do this? Why can't we do that? Well, it's all based on money if you're willing to pay. And so we have to balance. We're like a business. We have to run like a business because we are self-supporting. And so we finally got the go-ahead to really start planning the master plan in 97.
What kind of input did you get from the students?
We had lots
also,
of input.
Did this impact with all of the housing in the community which was going on at that time? Did that have any impact?
Well, there was some because students who would leave the residence halls to go to apartments, one of the things they would say to us is, well, I can do my own cooking. The food isn't all that great, and I don't like your choices or whatever. And so we thought that if we could make something better there, that would help the retention in the residence halls. And we know indeed that it has in the long run, it has. So we started with Earhart was the first of the projects, and we actually closed the dining service there in the spring of 2000. And started the renovation and reopened in the spring of 2003.
With a nice mural in there about Earhart.
Beautiful, yes, that we used some things from the archives
make, nice.
And it turned out really, really nicely. And you ask about student input. Yes, we had student input throughout. We had focus groups, we had surveys, we had what we call input committees where students and staff would sit on committees and we'd talk about what would you like to see in a new facility, what would you like not to see, what do you want to avoid, and we did that for several weeks, getting input from that, and then we had a master plan steering committee made up of staff and then student representatives on that, and that steering committee ran for, well, we probably started in 97 and 3 or 4 years, and so students would rotate off and on, and so we get different viewpoints. So we had lots of student input along the way, and one of the real interesting pieces we had was the concern was from students and also from alums in many cases who had lived with us in the past was, I mean, you're not going to have a food service in every building? What are we going to do? How are we going to do that? And so with the introduction of the electronic ID card, where students could opt, make their own decision to go somewhere else to eat, they began to realize that that wasn't such a bad deal because they could choose what they wanted to do. And so we said, okay, if you have a place to go to eat that you like, how far would you walk to get there? And overall, they told us they would walk 2 buildings from where they lived, from the residence hall where they lived. And so one of our goals in the master plan was to strategically place these dining courts so that nobody has to walk more than 2 buildings from where they live. And they can walk farther if they want, and they do because they walk from McCutcheon to Ford Dining Court.
But on the average is what you were asking for.
Yeah, and if they want to go right next door, they have a place to go next door. So we've really worked hard at listening to what students say and what they would like to have. And then once we opened the first facility at Earhart, and they saw what that vision was and what we were doing, then we didn't have any problems after that. They were excited for the next one and for the next one. And they had the picture and they knew that it was going to be good.
But then that was a renovation, but then you went to separate facilities,
Ford was the second.
Okay.
And actually, in the original plan, we were going to renovate Cary Quad and create a new dining court there. Because we had all this space, we thought, why waste it? But as we got into that project and the details of trying to renovate a place like Cary, which has the quadrangle design to make it handicap accessible, to air condition it, it was going to be huge. And somebody, I think John Sauter, said, you know, we could build a new building for the cost of what it'll cost to renovate Cary. And so from there we said, okay, then we realigned the master plan and said, okay, we'll build this new facility between Cary and Owen. And it was an excellent decision because we could never have had a facility as nice as we have at Ford in a renovation.
What did the Ford say when you decided to, and how did that come about? Did the Board of Trustees, of course they had to approve it, but.
Right. It was somewhat unique because they were alums of the university. They hadn't given a big gift, but they had given their lives to the university. And we were thrilled because Fred was the one who actually had signed off on the master plan. And I think they were very thrilled. They were very excited.
Having interviewed them, they are pleased with it.
Yeah.
And I think the new arch that's just been dedicated is really quite nice.
Uh-huh, yeah. But it was a really cute story about that is we go to Central Presbyterian Church and so do the Fords. And there were two students at church recently who were sitting behind Fred and Mary and got to talking to them afterward and introduced themselves. And the students said, "Fred and Mary Ford. Fred and Mary Ford. Why does that sound so familiar?" And somebody else standing by said, "Well, you know, your students, you're on campus, you know, Fred and Mary Ford Dining Court." Oh, my goodness. The students were just amazed that there really were people named Fred and Mary Ford.
Who
were living. So it was really
cute.
Fred and Mary got a real big kick out of that. That was really neat. So that the Ford Dining Court was just such a great, it was a great decision. But we'd never done it before. We'd never built a new building that was strictly dining facilities. But it turned out
sure
wonderfully.
Did, right.
And the third project was Windsor.
These are all focused within the master plan.
Right, this is the master plan, right. Uh-huh. And so Windsor was a renovation. I wanted, and people agreed very much, to maintain the Windsor ambiance, the English Tudor architectural style. And so it's, you know, it's very different than the others in its interior and its design and its decor. I call it a warm, cozy feel as compared to the contemporary, airy, open of Ford and now of Wiley. But I thought it was important to maintain the history. I feel very strongly that we need to keep some institutional history and people should know. And, of course, this is representative
right, exactly.
of that as well.
Right.
And then the last one was Wiley, what's now the Wiley Dining Court. And here again, it was originally going to be a renovation in Wiley Hall, but we just determined that Ford had been so successful as an independent, freestanding, that it really was worth a little bit of a delay and getting something built that was new construction.
Are there any differences that you added on from Ford versus Wiley, some things that... little enhancements. One is that South American.
Right. Well, the menus are, there are some differences in the menus. We actually, when we started the design of Wiley, we said we don't want them to be cookie cutters of one another. We want them to be unique in their own way, but we used a lot of the good things about Ford and then adapted them to make them a little bit unique. So the basic layout is kind of circular, and that
right.
is the same at Ford. The dish machine or dish room in the center and some of those things. But but it still has a very different decor, very different ambiance, and the menu
sure.
items are
What about
different.
The impact on staff that were in? You had a lot more staff in the residence hall dining
mm-hmm.
facilities.
Right, and one of the things that I just spent huge hours on was reassuring staff that, and we promised staff that no one would lose their job, that and we had calculated in our financial plan that because we were doing this over a period of years, we could, with attrition and retirements, we could absorb that loss and people would have to change jobs and move, it wouldn't be the same job or the same location, but they would have a job. And so I spent hours and hours meeting with staff and reassuring them and going through a placement process each time we closed a facility and opened a new one so that everyone had an opportunity to express their preferences and that sort
sure.
of thing. And so
That's
we were pretty successful in that, and we lost some people who didn't want to go through it, but for the most part, we didn't put anybody out on the street who didn't make that decision
right.
themselves.
Is the student enrollment, is that leveled off a little bit because you have fewer, or did you notice any change in the numbers of students that you now hire with fewer dining facilities?
Not really, because we still need... we need a lot more students in each location.
Right. And your hours are different.
And the hours are different, right. and the menus are different. We're doing a number of things that are either made to order or made really fresh, and so it takes more labor to do that than it does to just make a pan of something and put it on the line and serve it.
Right.
So the menus are different, the hours are different, a lot of differences in the whole thing.
Yeah, and you've expanded the hours too, which is one of the things that, because we go to Tarkington a lot, and you know, if you got there close to 7, but now we have a choice, but also the hours within that have been expanded to some extent.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What about summer conferences? Any comments on that? Some of the residence halls are used during the summers, are they not?
Right. We have a lot of small conferences, sports camps and small groups, and then we like to have one or two each summer of what we call megas, which are the big 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 groups, like Presbyterian Youth Triennium and some of those. So it's a different type of situation when this conferees come in, and we call all of our staff back. If they're off for the summer or if they're doing something else, we call them back to dining. And we actually, one of the interesting things we have learned to do with summer conferences is to enlist community groups who want to raise funds for their organization. Their members come and work for us in dining during these conferences. Because we don't have the student employees that we have during the school year, we need some of those extra help just during mealtime. And so church groups, Sunday school classes, PEO groups are really big on that, Kiwanis and things. And I send out letters in January and say, are you interested for this summer? And and then the money goes directly to that organization, not to the individual. And then they can use it for their fundraising.
Sure.
So it's kind of a nice community collaboration thing.
Right. Fact Fellow Program, how has that been impacted since most of the dining halls do not have, or the residence halls do not have dining facilities?
Right. It has impacted the Faculty Fellow Program, as I'm sure you know, in a lot of ways. I don't know the answer. I think here again there are a lot of variables there. Today's student is different than when the program started, the dining facilities. We try to encourage the faculty fellows to be creative, think of ways that you can interact with your students.
Other than just outside, other than just a meal.
Just sitting, and as now that we have the all of the dining courts finished and open, I'm hoping that the counts will sort of equalize. We won't have the huge crowds at Ford that we've had. And that there'll be a little more opportunity for the FAC fellows and so forth to find those niches.
One of the things I think it's been good is to have those open houses or something beforehand, which you did for Wiley and also for the when we got the cars for the FAC.
Mm-hmm.
That was nice.
Mm-hmm.
To let
people know what it's like.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That sort of thing.
And it's, you can do that before school starts or
right.
Before the rush or whatever.
Yeah. And I think the Faculty Fellow Program has been a great program over the years.
Father was there.
Yeah, he was. Oh, yeah. And Roy was a FAC fellow for a while. We'd go to McCutcheon, and it was a great way to meet students.
But even the functions that they had, you remember years ago, they had winter whispers.
The dinner dances.
And Jim and I would go to the dinners, and then they'd say, well, will you be joining us for the dance? Because the bus would take them. And he'd say, well, we'll be there later.
Right. And of course that was, and those dinner dances
were. And Vern Freeman, was a FAC fellow over at Tarkington, and he came, and sometimes I think he went to the dances.
Is that right? Yeah, we didn't go to the dances very often either, but that was a wonderful tradition, the dinner dances, and of course from the early years, the 40s and the 50s and into the 70s. It'd be interesting to know what students today would think of that, but they wouldn't know how to act in many cases.
Diversity. A couple comments on diversity.
We have programs
and things of that sort.
We do have residence halls. We actually have a coordinator of diversity and community relations. James Foster is doing a lot of work with that, as well as a fellow in our human resources department, and they have a program of. That's integrated with dining, particularly at Windsor, where they do international dinners, an international theme dinner once a month or two or three times a semester to show students what that food might be like culturally and so forth. But I think the other thing, and we do a lot of menu items that are diverse.
Which is good.
International foods, vegetarian, vegan foods, Things that we would never have even thought about 10, 15, 20 years ago.
And also in the community, there's been restaurants that have opened up.
Right, so Windsor has an international line station that does, today was Cuban and and Hispanic. They do East Indian, they do Mediterranean, they do Greek. We have Asian food in a couple of locations. Of course, we have pasta and Italian food, and we have the churrascaria in Wiley for the Brazilian. So we really try to be very diverse in the things that we have. But the other part of it is that we have a very diverse employee base both in our student employees, but also in our regular employees. It's really interesting and makes it very nice. We visited some other schools in the Midwest a couple of years ago as we were preparing to open Wiley, and came back, and I really hadn't thought too much about it, but the staff that went with me said, "Wow, Sarah, did you notice how they didn't have any diversity in their staff at all? They were just all women, Midwest, white." It was just very interesting to see that difference compared to our situation, where we really have a very diverse campus. And I know it's not as diverse as some people would like, but
it is quite, and I think these international menus and things of that sort just add to it, mm-hmm, enhance it, mm-hmm. I think.
We had a guest at Wiley Dining Court last week who came there because he's from Brazil. He's a postdoc, I think, or visiting scholar, maybe, and had heard about the churrasca, and he came and told us that it was very authentic, and he loved it, and he came back and brought some friends.
Super.
So, you know, that's what we want.
We need all that PR.
That's right.
Now, a couple awards, housing and food. So you got you talk about these, the Presidential Service Award from the Association of College University, and you were the third person to serve as chair of the food internship committee.
Right.
And they highlighted that in the announcement.
Oh, okay, yeah. The NACUFS, which is our professional organization, has a food service management internship that is a summer. It's a summer internship. And Helen Townsend, who was my predecessor here two generations before, was instrumental in starting that internship. And Purdue is the only school in the country that has continually hosted students every summer since that started in 1960, I think it was.
Wow.
Helen was the chair of that committee for many years. Dorothy Wicker was the chair when she was, and then I was the chair for many years. So all three of us have been really involved in that program and that committee. And it has brought us students, and students come from other schools. They're not Purdue students who intern with us.
Purdue students not eligible?
They can apply, but they would go somewhere else.
Oh, they go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Okay, not
they different. wouldn't intern here. And so we have some staff members, and I've had staff members who were interns. And so it's just been a really great professional growth opportunity, and it was another way that I had of being involved with students.
Right.
And staying in touch with students.
And also at the association at the national level, too.
And at the national level. And then meeting other professionals, other colleagues around the country through this organization. And so it was a great experience.
Is there a limit on how many can apply? And do they get money? Or
The host school has to provide a room and board and a stipend for them while they're there.
Is it for the whole summer?
And it's for 8 weeks in the summer. Oh. And what we're doing is introducing them to college food service as a career path, which isn't always promoted at the academic departments.
Right.
And so we're just trying to get them to think about this as a career and show them what it's like and what we do.
What's going on.
Sure. Yeah. And we're also doing that now with the Foods and Nutrition Department. We have an agreement with the Coordinated Undergraduate Program in Dietetics. And each fall semester, we have dietetic interns now out in our facilities. We have six right now from that program who are studying to be dietitians but learning about food service management.
Right.
And I teach... I teach four sessions for them of topics that are applied to management, and
sounds good.
I really enjoy that. I like that part.
Then the other was that Best in Show from the Food Management Magazine.
Yes,
and,
that was.
And this recognizes Purdue's efforts to revitalize dining for its students and staff. That's your quote there.
That was so exciting. The magazine. That's the magazine up there on the wall in the
frame.
That's the cover. I was a cover girl.
Good for you.
They have this, Food Management is a magazine for what's called non-commercial food service. So hospitals, schools, colleges, business, not restaurants, not the commercial sector. And so this magazine each year has a best concepts competition. you can nominate yourself, you can submit, or somebody can nominate you, but they have different categories. And in 2006, I had entered us in several categories thinking that we would get some recognition in one if I did a lot, you know. And at the same time, the consultants that we worked with on all these projects had alerted food management to what we were doing and that we were making this, they had this master plan. And so the magazine was interested in doing an article about us, and so they named us the best in show of their best concepts competition. So we were number one in the country for a year.
Wow. Very good.
Because of, and it was all related to the master plan and the makeover. That's of what nice. We had done, that, what I call re-engineering our food service.
Right.
A lot of schools around the country are doing things like this, but very few, A, are as large as we are, and very few are doing everything, changing everything,
the complete thing
that we have done.
Sure.
So that makes us kind of unique in that sense.
Yeah.
And, so it's very exciting.
Tell us about family.
Well, I'm married to Roy, who's also very involved in Purdue, and
We met at Purdue.
We actually were introduced in this by Nelson Parkhurst, who was the registrar at that time and was Roy's boss, because Roy was in the registrar's, and Sue Graham, who was the residence hall manager while at Windsor, where I was the food manager. The two of them were related by marriage, and so they decided that Roy and I should meet. And so we met in, we were introduced in Wood Hall dining room at Windsor Halls, and It went from there.
It
went from there.
So, do you still participate in the alumni? So, do you do any alumni activities at all? Both of you being Purdue graduates.
Not really. We haven't gotten too much involved in that.
But you're more involved with the musical organization.
With the band,
right?
Yeah, Roy's, of course, the announcer for the marching band. I'm an advisor for Tau Beta Sigma, which is the band sorority. He's an advisor and an alum for Kappa Kappa Psi, which is the band fraternity. And so that's really one of the ways we stay in touch with students.
And also, going to athletics, you're pretty involved in that, right?
Right. Oh, yeah, always going to basketball and football games, exactly. Yeah, and sometimes volleyball. So we love Purdue, and we're going to stay around in Purdue in retirement. We're not going anywhere.
I was going to ask you what your post-Purdue plans.
Yeah, we're staying here. We're volunteer community organizations, community activities, campus organizations.
And he helps out, I know, at the Visitors Information
right,
Center.
Right, uh-huh. And I was thinking that I might be doing that too. I think that would be a fun thing to
sure.
do, just to see people and stay
right.
in touch with things. Work in the yard when I feel like working in the yard. Cook at home, which I never do now.
I'll be over.
Look, I'm looking forward to that.
Any travel, do you think?
And travel, okay. Yeah. We have a trip planned for this summer. To the Rhine River cruise.
Ooh, that would be
and,
nice.
So we're looking forward to that. That's our celebration cruise. And then next summer in 2010, we're going to go on a trip to the Passion Play in Oberammergau, Germany.
Oh, that would
with
be nice.
Gordon Mork, who is...
Who's been doing that for...
He's done it. We went with him in 2000, and we wanted to go back one more time in 2010 to see it, because they do it every 10 years.
Sure.
So those are our two big trips on the horizon for the first 2 years.
Oh, those will sneak in, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay, how about an outstanding event? Got one of those in your life, and also a favorite Purdue tradition. Think of those.
An outstanding event. Personally, I guess, and from my career and my job, I think, of course, the master plan has to stand out as something that I didn't ever expect to be involved in. And when we opened that first facility, I told somebody it must be sort of like birthing a baby, because I've never done that, but it must be like that, because of it's painful, but it's exciting and just so rewarding and so great to see the student reaction. So I think from my career standpoint, that was just absolutely the pinnacle of and the completion of the plan, that we were able to complete it. On my watch.
Yeah.
And if we were starting it today, we couldn't afford to do. I don't think it would ever happen, just for a variety of reasons. But we're done with it, and I'm really, really happy with that.
What's your favorite Purdue tradition? Got one of those?
Oh, I guess I have to say the Boilermaker Special, and that the Reamer Club, and all the things that they do, the spirit that they have, and the fun that it is when other people see the train.
And they forget to honk and I honk.
Yeah, yeah. And how unique it is.
That's right.
To Purdue.
Right. In closing, any comments that you'd like to share? Did you think about or something I didn't ask? Anything that comes to mind?
Well, I think I'm prejudiced, but I think Purdue is a great institution. It's a great place to work. It's been a great career. Great students, great staff, dedicated staff, and I wouldn't change any of that for anything. I just think it's and the history that is Purdue
that accompanies it
is just so amazing. I hope that in retirement I can do some more reading and read some of those Purdue books that are on our shelf that I've never read, but I know
we'll
are really good.
Put it on our schedule.
Yeah, right. Okay. Right.
Thank you very much, Sarah.
Oh,
I really appreciate
I appreciate
this.
It too.
My
it was
Thanks.
So much fun and.